This is Music Respawn from GDC. I'm Kate Remington talking with composer Winifred Phillips, and it's really just so much fun to have a chance to catch up with you.
Well, thank you so much, Kate. I'm really honored to be included in your program.
Oh, well, thank you. These are just such fun conversations. And one of the things that I really love about talking with composers is just kind of getting underneath the surface and finding out just the craft of it. Because to me, writing music, first of all, it's just like way beyond anything I could do. But I know there are some techniques, and you talk about them in your book, The Composer's Guide to Video Game Music, and we'll get around to that too. But you just gave a presentation about creating suspense in music, and that is one of those aspects that, especially with all these genres of games, is really an interesting thing to know, right?
Yeah, it's a really interesting thing to consider, particularly for video game development, because a video game consumer is a participant in the experience. So creating suspense for a player is different from creating suspense for an audience for a film. You're talking to someone who is already engaged in an activity, and you're trying to shape the emotion to intensify their active experience. I find that to be a really interesting thing to contemplate.
Well, it is, and what makes games so different is, as you mentioned, they are so interactive and they're so immersive. And are there moments when you've created suspense with jump scares or the drones that you mentioned in your session? Are there moments when you get word from the studio that you have to dial it back because it's like too much?
Well, I haven't had anything like that so far. I think the only thing that would be similar was actually a technical issue having to do with the Assassin's Creed Liberation score for the PlayStation Vita. That's a handheld system. It was originally released for Vita, and then it was re-released for consoles. But when it was on the Vita, some thought had to be put into how the music would sound in the small speakers of a handheld device. So there were some sounds that I'd associated with tension that had crackling effects or would feel very vibrant in the upper frequency spectrum, and they came across as shrill in the little speakers of a handheld device, and we had to tweak those and dial them back and things like that to make sure that people who weren't playing the games with headphones would still have a good time.
Yeah, that's a really important part too, because you do have to cover all the bases, and then there's the whole wild card of open world games versus games where the player is more guided toward what the goal is and that particular mission. One of the things that really struck me in your session is that you broke it down to very specific ways of creating music, and I'm wondering, because there's that academic aspect to it, does that make it easier for you when you get an assignment from a studio?
Well, yeah, I think so. It gives me a place to start. I think a lot of the scariness of the creative process is the white page syndrome, when you are just looking at nothing and thinking about how to create something. So I like to have these sorts of philosophies and guidances that I've contemplated or read about, and they help me to become inspired and take away some of that nervousness that we feel when we're beginning a creative process.
Yeah, that's got to be tough. And how early most of the time are you brought into the process with the dev team? I would imagine it's really nice if you're brought in the beginning, but I know that doesn't always happen.
That's true. Most of the time, music is contemplated towards the end of development. There are practical reasons why this is a good idea, because we do like to have the sound design elements already fleshed out so that we know how our music will correspond and interact with it. Also, we do like to know that the energy and kinetics of gameplay are in a form that's going to remain consistent so that we can shape our music to it. If we are brought in too early, we can create music for assets that end up changing, and that's kind of a bummer.
Well, yeah, and because games have such a long dev cycle sometimes, you know, years and years in some cases, I know that it's a lot of times things just change, and then, yeah, you've got to, like, start over, so.
Yeah, that's very true. However, it is exciting to be brought in early. For Spore Hero, I was brought in fairly early in the development, and that gave us an opportunity to experiment with different approaches to an interactive music system. It was very pie-in-the-sky kind of work, and the audio director was very ambitious. We tried out lots of different approaches, so that was fun.
Other things that I wanted to ask you about in the session is the idea that silence is important, and then there are all these other aspects of creating suspenseful music. But as a composer, you don't always get to say where the studio is going to use your music. So how does that piece of the puzzle all work?
Yeah, that's true. Sometimes we'll create music for a section of the game and then find that that music has been repurposed somewhere else because the game design has changed since the music was composed. And that can actually be kind of interesting. Sometimes the music will fit more in a more interesting way in another circumstance than in the way in which it was originally conceived. So it's a very liquid and vibrant process. And there's a lot of back and forth collaboration with the development team. I enjoy that part.
Yeah, I bet. And it probably helps a lot if you don't hang on to your music too tightly and understand that a piece that you might create that you think is perfect for one moment in a game actually does work better.
Yeah, that's funny. There's a little story about that. When I was composing the score for the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory game, that was a tie-in to the Tim Burton film, there was a sequence in which Charlie has to jump across moving conveyor belts, and this was a new addition, so there wasn't any music that I had been asked to compose for it, and I found that they had taken what I had composed as a stinger and looped it for that sequence, and weirdly enough, it worked so well. It was a very short, little low rumbling kind of thing, but the repetition kind of had a sense of doom to it that worked really well as he was jumping from one conveyor belt to another. Thank you. unexpected surprises are a part of what game development is, I think.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And that's what makes it so interesting for the players, too. And one of the other examples that she used in the session was the two sides of your music for Sim Animals. There's a happy version in the beginning when the little area is all nice and everybody's getting along nicely. And then there's a darker version, too. So as you're composing music, are you thinking about the different ways that it can use it and the different ways you can manipulate a melody?
Yeah, I think what's great about composing music for games, and I try to keep this in my mind, that creating a suite of musical themes at the beginning that seems well tied into what the ideas that the game is attempting to express allows me later to do variations on those themes for the different circumstances in which the player will find themselves. So I'll find myself, and I work with my music producer, Winnie Waldron, who's a really talented music producer. We've been working together since we first started working at National Public Radio. And so she has a philosophy behind that at a certain point during music composition, thematic composition should stop. And we should decide at that point, these are the themes that represent this game. From here on in, it's variation and elongation. We are going to flesh out what's here, but the identity has been expressed, and now is the time to make it more complex and interesting by really exploring the possibilities that this thematic Bible offers. So that's something that I really enjoy doing.
Yeah, that's got to be a great, not time saver exactly, because I'm sure it takes a while before you really figure out what the game needs and what the musical identity is going to be. But once you've got that and you've got boundaries, so that must help the process kind of solidify.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Once you have that that's a vocabulary of musical themes. It becomes the centerpiece of the way in which you communicate throughout the rest of the game. And it allows you to create a unity for the game, a sense of identity. One of the things that makes game composition different from film composition is that a film has a story that's already developed and fleshed out. You know where it's going, so you can plan accordingly. With music composition for games, it's such a wide-ranging thing, and you're not always sure how many pieces of music you're going to be asked to compose and what the purposes of that music will serve. You don't know the shape of the story, really. You don't get a sense of how it will be experienced by the player, because there is that sense of chance. The player can make choices and things can change. So having a suite of themes that you can then come back to and repeat allows you to create musical identity within those challenges to make a score feel like it has something unique to express, even though you don't have the benefit of a linear narrative to shape your work.
Well, the other interesting aspect of that is that, you know, the developers and the designers work so hard to make their game look unified so that no matter where you are in an area, no matter which level you're playing, you know it's that game because they work so hard with the palette and the engine and the sound design. So having the music have a unified feel too is really important, and then it all kind of gels.
Yeah, it's something that is satisfying for a game composer too, just to be able to have a sense of creating something that expresses something personal for us. Having a suite of themes or even a suite of instruments or a consistent approach to musical techniques within the context of a project, it allows us to show ourselves within our music. And that's something that makes the work fun and makes it enjoyable for us, I think.
Well, sure, because then you can kind of put your own fingerprint on it. And I would think that that's a real challenge because you don't always get to write the kind of music that you want. You know, let's say you just really love oboes or something, but the game doesn't really, the sound of the music doesn't really lend itself to that. So it's really interesting that you find other ways to kind of get your own unique voice into the music. So.
Well, thank you. I do find that that's a really exciting thing about game composition. While we do not have the benefit of the linear narrative, there is also a sense that music has a more prominent position within the experience. There are times in which a gamer may be just wandering around a landscape, and their only companion in those moments is just the environmental atmosphere and the musical score. We are shaping their perception of the world that the designers have created, so it's like a conversation we're having directly with the player. And I think that's very satisfying as a game composer.
Oh, yeah, I hadn't thought about it like that, but that's a really, really interesting way to think about it because you're right, a lot of times you are just all by yourself in the game, and it's nice to have some company, especially if you're in a really super bleak area like happens in God of War. You've written a wonderful, wonderful book to help composers and people who love game music kind of get inside of it, your Composer's Guide to Game Music. And one of the things that I would love to know is, as you were writing it, did that change how you wrote your own music that you were working on at the time?
Actually, it really did. That was an interesting side effect of the process. I, because the book was published by the MIT Press, I was very much aware that there is a long history of scholarship within that publisher. It's a very serious and a very accomplished scholarly press. And I was flattered to have been accepted for publication by the MIT Press. So I think while I was writing the book, I had in my mind that that was the destination where this book would end up. So I thought a lot about how scholarship could relate to what I do as a game composer, thinking about it in terms of the way it relates to psychology, and that those kinds of issues that I hadn't thought about as much beforehand, I think about them a lot now, because I did a lot of research for the book, and I found that that was really illuminating. So now I keep a blog, and I write every few weeks, I'll write another article that is inspired by some of the things I learned in the book, or ways in which I'm growing as a composer and learning new things about what scholarship has to say about the relationships between music and the brain and virtual reality experiences and how music can interrelate with that. So it's all very interesting, and I feel like it's encouraged me to continue growing as a composer and to be thinking in a more intellectual way about the work I do.
Yeah, and what's interesting about it, I'm sure a lot of it is just emotion and instinct and just, you know, your own best guess for what's going to work. But I'm sure, and what I've heard from other composers too, is that it's been so helpful to have your manual to kind of find a way forward and get unstuck or think about an aspect of game music from a different angle, which is super helpful for them.
Yeah, that's surprised me. It really has. When I was writing the book, I called it A Composer's Guide to Game Music because I really wanted it to feel just like a guide meant for a composer's viewpoint. I'd read a lot of books when I first got into game music composition, but they were focused both on composers and on audio designers, and they focused a lot on the technical aspects of game music composition. And of course, that's very important because that's a big stumbling block for composers for more linear media coming into game composition. It's very different. But it never talked about how the creative process was different for a composer of game music. It didn't come at it from that perspective of a composer. And so that's why I wanted to call it A Composer's Guide, because I wanted to write to my fellow composers and talk about it from my own personal perspective, the kind of challenges I had, and the things that are exciting to us creatively, in addition to the ways in which we can approach it from a technical standpoint. I thought that was important to proceed that way, and it would make this field more accessible to people who hadn't been exposed to the admittedly complicated nature of game music composition.
I've been astonished as I've been talking with composers at how complicated it is, because as a player, the music's there and you can appreciate it. But once I've started talking with composers, it's just unbelievably complex with little stems and threads and just, you know, programmatic, and it's really astonishing. And I would think that because so many people are able to create music in their own studios now, and maybe they don't have the means to go to the Berklee School or some of the other really good programs, that your book is really useful for them.
Well, it's funny because I hear now that my book is used a lot in schools, and that's so surprising to me. It wasn't something that I had thought when I was originally doing it. I was writing it for people who were like me, starting out, a young me who would really have liked a book that spoke to the kinds of things I was worried about as a youngster. And so I didn't write it with the format of a textbook. I wrote it as more like a friendly guide that you would just read on your own. And so the fact that it's now used in so many schools is surprising, and it's kind of exciting too. It's something that I had never anticipated, so I'm delighted that it's found a home in institutions like that.
No, that's fantastic. And Winifred, it has been so much fun to talk with you and kind of get inside how you write music. So thank you so much.
Well, you're very welcome. This has been such a pleasure.